So tonight I'm going to talk about hope. Seemed like an appropriate topic as the year is getting darker and we're heading towards solstice. And also in the Christian liturgical calendar, yesterday was the first Sunday of Advent. It's the beginning of the Advent season. So liturgically, the beginning of Christmas season. And Advent is a very hopeful time. And so it just felt like hope would be an important topic. Now, it's not necessarily a word that you hear talked about too much in classical Buddhist texts. And one of the problems with hope is that hope often gets conflated with expectation. I talk about my hopes, plural. Or I say, I hope that, and then there's an expectation. And expectations are funny. Buddhism has a lot to say about expectations. Expectations get us into all kinds of trouble for a variety of reasons. First of all, many of our expectations are just flat out not correct. Very simply. You know, if you think about it, certainly it's been true in my life that many times I've gotten myself all worked up, you know, this is going to be the best thing ever, or this is going to be the worst thing ever. And then either it doesn't happen, or it happens and it's not that big of a deal. You know, think about all the expectations you have in which you invest tons and tons of emotional energy. Do events actually play out that way? You know? And yet every time, again, we're hooked by our expectations, you know? Insofar as I'm paying attention to my expectations, emotionally investing in my expectations, that means my emotional energy is going into the future. It's going away from the present moment. And of course, Buddhism urges us to focus on the present moment. Buddhism urges us to focus on the present moment because our vitality, our life energy, is in the present moment. Our body only really understands the present moment. The mind can understand past, present, and future, so the mind can go on all kinds of adventures and leave the body behind. Another way to say it is that we come into a deeper harmony with ourselves, a deeper alignment with ourselves, only in the present moment. When our emotional energy is not being poured out into imaginary future things, but instead invested in where we are right now, there's a possibility of a deep self-connection. And it's funny that there's certainly that possibility there, and yet the tendency of our mind is to keep on racing off to the past or to the future, you know? It's almost as if, you know, how can I say? I got some grievous wound on my arm, say, and then the Buddha magically appeared and gave me a salve that would cure the wound, and then for some reason I started wiping the salve everywhere else on my body except the wound. That's kind of what we do with our attention. Our attention gets sent everywhere except where it will do us the most good, which is right here, right now.
Why is that?
Why is that? Why? Which part?
Which, why it won't go to us, you know, ourselves. It goes everywhere.
That's a great...
Yeah.
That's a great question. Why is that? First of all, we're creatures of memory, mm-hmm. and our memories are important, and we invest all kinds of emotional energy in our memories, right. And so that makes us go into the past. We also have this extraordinary ability to plan and to anticipate the future, And at a practical level, that's good. You know, you want to make sure that you have the money for next month's rent and that kind of thing. You know, for like basic details of life, that's fine. But then we go overboard with not only planning the practical things, but trying to plan out all the emotionally significant things. Mm-hmm. And then we wind up investing tons of emotional energy. And it's basically, we do this because we can. The mind very naturally is attracted to what is novel. And in fact, a lot of marketing depends on that, incidentally. Buy the next newest thing, you know, go into debt to pay for the next newest thing, that sort of thing. And we think, you know, we imagine that there's going to be novelty in the future, you know, and so that's part of the draw of it. And we tell ourselves, there's no novelty where I am right now. Well, in fact, if you investigate the present moment, there's an incredible amount of novelty in it. But it's not necessarily evident to the senses. It's not evident to the strategic mind. And so there's lots of reasons why we get, you know, and part of it is just the nature of our culture, you know. Listen to, and you know, any news report or any, you know, any talking head or anything like that, they're telling you what you should be paying attention to in the future, you know, what you should be worrying about in the future, that sort of thing. So there are a lot of reasons. I don't know if that's helpful. Mm-hmm. But back to hope. The hope that would be consistent with the teachings of Buddhism is a hope without expectations. Now that's very paradoxical. And it's not something that the strategic mind necessarily understands at first glance, hope without expectations. And there's several ways to say it. There's the cognitive part of hope. You know, I create some rosy picture of the future and then I pin my hopes to it, that kind of thing. But then there's also the feeling of hope. And the feeling of hope can be cultivated apart from narratives about how I think my future is going to be. And in fact, from at least in the view of certain traditions, for example, in the Christian tradition, hope is actually a virtue. And it's considered a virtue because it's something that you actually exercise. In fact, some people would say, once you have nothing left to hope for, that's when the real work of hope begins. You know, it's almost analogous to when people fall in love. And of course, falling in love is this great chemical ride. It's a fantastic ride, but it ends. And then once the falling in love honeymoon ride ends, that's when the real work of love begins. You know, and much in the same way, when we run out of things to hope for, that's really when the work of hope truly begins. And so what is the basis of this hope without expectations? Well, there are a lot of ways to say it. One way to say it is a kind of visceral trust in life. So it's not a head thing. It's very much something rooted in the body. A few weeks ago, I gave a Dharma talk on the spirituals of principle psychology. And two of the principles there, one is that the universe is made of love. And another principle is that we are made of love. Even though it doesn't feel that way necessarily, even the places that are self-critical or filled with shame and guilt and all kinds of things that we don't want to feel, even they are made of love. Now, if that's something that you can really experience deep in your body, and again, not just like a head thing, you know, Mike said so I'm going to believe it, but really a deep thing in your body, then that's a very hopeful feeling. The feeling that whatever happens to me, that may not be what I want, it may even be painful, but whatever happens to me is ultimately a way of the universe showing me love. It's a way that will foster my growth or what my soul needs or something of that sort, even though it might not be what I had planned. Another way I like to say it is that all things contain the teaching. And so again, whatever happens to me, it might not be what I wanted. It might be painful. It might be something that, you know, other people would legitimately agree is a tremendous misfortune that has befallen me, something like that. But there's a teaching there, a teaching that I have to integrate for my soul's journey. And so these are all, you could say, hopeful energies to carry in the body. And even with these, we have to be careful, because even with these, if we have these feelings, the mind naturally wants to go into stories. Well, if that's true, then this will be true, and this will be true. And then we create stories, and then we create expectations. Then we're setting ourselves up again for the trap of expectations. But if you can remain present with the feelings of hope and not go into the mental chatter, that's hope without expectation. I'm not claiming that this is an easy thing to do, but I'm holding this out as a possibility. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheets. I used to be a high school teacher, so I always have quote sheets. It was particularly fun looking for quotes for this topic. So for Mr. Confucius, our greatest glory is not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall. Again, a very hopeful perspective that, you know, of course we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to get up again. This wonderful one from the poet Hafez: ever since happiness heard your name, it has been running through the streets trying to find you. I love that one. From the philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson: this new day is too dear with all its hopes and invitations to waste a moment on the yesterdays. And so just an awareness of the freshness of time, the freshness of the present moment. From Mr. Emerson's friend, Mr. Thoreau: if we will be quiet and ready enough, we shall find compensation in every disappointment. That's a powerful one. A couple from Emily Dickinson: hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. And then this other one, very short, from Emily Dickinson, simply: I dwell in possibility. There's something profoundly affirmative about that worldview. I dwell in possibility. Thomas Edison said, many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up. And in fact, one of my favorite stories about Edison. Edison and his crew, they were working on the light bulb, you know. And the hard problem with the light bulb is what material to use for the filament, because if you use the wrong material, it just burns out. And so they went through, they're working on it for a year, they went through hundreds and hundreds of different materials, and they all burned out, you know. And at one point, the foreman just came to Edison, and he was completely exhausted and completely discouraged. You know, Mr. Edison, we've been doing this for a year. We've tried 1,000 ways. None of them have worked. This has been a complete failure. We should give up. And Edison looked at him and said, nonsense. Now we know 1,000 ways that it doesn't work. And of course, it was that determination that gave us the light bulb, you know. From Gandhi: you must not lose faith in humanity. Humanity is an ocean. Even if a few drops of the ocean are dirty, the ocean does not become dirty. From the Christian writer G.K. Chesterton: hope means hoping when things are hopeless, or it is no virtue at all. As long as matters are really hopeful, hope is mere flattery or platitude. It is only when everything is hopeless that hope begins to be a strength. A couple from Winston Churchill: the pessimist sees a difficulty in every opportunity. The optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. And then this great short one: if you're going through hell, keep going. From the motivational writer Dale Carnegie: most of the important things in the world have been accomplished by people who kept on trying when there seemed to be no hope at all. A touching one from J.R.R. Tolkien: there is some good in this world, and it's worth fighting for. From the Christian writer Norman Vincent Peale: shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. From Anton Saint-Exupéry, author of The Little Prince: if you want to build a ship, don't herd people together to collect wood and don't assign them tasks of work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. That one is great. That one is closely related to the whole start with why kind of movement. A couple from Nelson Mandela, not surprisingly: I am fundamentally an optimist. Whether that comes from nature or nurture, I can't say. Part of being optimistic is keeping one's head pointed toward the sun, one's feet moving forward. He also said, may your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. Maya Angelou said, you will face many defeats in your life, but never let yourself be defeated. That remarkable young woman, Anne Frank, said, I don't think of all the misery, but the beauty that still remains. And it fascinates me to think that Nelson Mandela was 10 years older than Anne Frank. That just kind of puts in perspective how old she would have been. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. says, only in the darkness can you see the stars. George Weinberg says, hope never abandons you, you abandon it. The Dalai Lama said, I find hope in the darkest days and focus on the brightest. I do not judge the universe. Oprah Winfrey says very simply, you get in life what you have the courage to ask for. Very powerful. From Steve Jobs: remembering that you're going to die is the best way to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart. From the novelist Barbara Kingsolver: hope is a renewable option. If you run out of it at the end of the day, you get to start over in the morning. Of course, he knew Obama would have to be on this quote sheet. Mm-hmm. The best way not to feel hopeless is to get up and do something. Don't wait for good things to happen to you. Go out and make some good things happen. And you will fill the world with hope, and you will fill yourself with hope. Very practical. Rebecca Solnit said, hope is an embrace of the unknown. David Orr said, hope is a verb with its shirt sleeves rolled up. And Shigenori Kamioka said, find the seed at the bottom of your heart and bring forth a flower.